Hey guys, it's James.
And Samuel.
And you may notice the audio quality is significantly better than before. We just finally got a new mic, a USB mic that we are now using on a computer. So we are moving away from the low quality bullshit you've all come to love. And we're giving you some new, awesome, high quality audio shit that you can hate on all you want because we fucking suck.
Exactly. So don't let that detract from the fact that we fucking suck.
Yeah, we definitely still suck. And this new high quality stuff just amplifies how much we suck.
Exactly.
You can hear every little bit of suckage.
It's grand. It's a fun time.
We're a little excited about this thing.
Yeah, strap in for a horrible time, guys.
Yeah.
But this, what we are coming at today, is the next segment of Week in Anjo, covering September 7th through the 13th. And I don't believe we have any announcements this episode.
Nothing particularly major that I know of.
No, James is back from Chicago.
Oh my god, Chicago sucks. Fuck Chicago.
But yeah, he's back. Everything is right as rain yet again. And with that, I figure we'll just jump right into it.
Let's get to it.
All right, so this first one was posted by myself on Friday, September 13th. And the headline is, Hong Kong celebrates Mid-Autumn Festival with lanterns and protests. So Hong Kong celebrated the Mid-Autumn Festival with lanterns, carnivals, and protests. Celebrations and demonstrations took place concurrently across the city that has seen turmoil and violence in the past 3 months. There was no respite from protesters who created their own light displays with lasers and smartphones as they bunker down and prepare for another weekend of rallies. They have been resolute with their demands, despite Chief Executive Carrie Lam's September 4th decision to withdraw the extradition legislation that sparked the unrest that has rocked Hong Kong since June.
Now, I'm sorry, did that say with lasers and smartphones?
Yeah, they were creating little light shows.
With lasers?
Yeah, like little
That's a hell of a protest. Lights. That's awesome. So
yeah, there were pictures attached to the article, and yeah, they were beautiful.
I bet. Nothing like a little celebration and some anarchy.
Oh, yeah, it's grand.
So but, things are going pretty smooth in Hong Kong-ish.
Yeah, for now.
Considering they've been at this for what? This is what, 15 weeks now?
Something like
16 weeks? It's been a while. Considering how long it's been, it's nice to finally see something, you know, come from it.
Because yeah,
it's been nothing but consistent hardship throughout this whole thing, and it's nice to see, you know, a nice celebration with carnivals and apparently lasers. That's fucking awesome. It's nice to see something cool.
Oh, yeah.
Wholesome as fuck.
But moving forward, this one was also posted by myself on Wednesday, September 11th, and the headline is, Hong Kong protesters sing and boo the China anthem.
Yeah, so, boo it.
Hong Kong's protest movement made its presence felt in a sports stadium and shopping malls on Tuesday. Fans attending a football match drowned out the pregame Chinese national anthem with loud booing. Protesters have also staged flash events in shopping malls singing Glory to Hong Kong, which has become an unofficial anthem of the movement. The protesters won a major concession last week when the extradition bill, which sparked the unrest, was scrapped. But this has failed to end the unrest as protesters continue to demand full democracy and an investigation into allegations of police abuse. On Tuesday night, thousands of protesters gathered in shopping malls across Hong Kong, chanting slogans and singing Glory to Hong Kong. In the popular shopping district of Mong Kok, a sea of protesters dressed in black were seen congregating across the different levels of one mall. Another video showed protesters chanting Go Hong Kong, a phrase that has been used frequently as a sign of encouragement. Shopping malls have been the scene of clashes in recent weeks, with one incident in July seeing riot police fight battles with protesters inside a mall in the district of Sha Tin. But the recent events have played out peacefully.
Which, that's still fucking nice. Even with all this stuff going on, they're still playing out peacefully, and I can appreciate that.
Well, some of them are. Some of them are.
It is
good to see these ones going over peacefully and the police not, you know, escalating things.
Right? I mean, frankly, when you have a whole country protesting against you, I wouldn't want to escalate anything. I know I would lose.
Yeah, they've been, they, they're pretty fond of escalating things, though, but it seems like they kind of pussyfoot around it sometimes. Like, they'll have, like, a big escalation in a peaceful protest turn violent, and they kind of back down for a short while, and then they regain their balls, and then they do it again.
So, overall, as far as Hong Kong is concerned, things are looking up. The people are staying in high spirits, maintaining a good essence of peace about them, and they seem to be coming together pretty well.
Which is nice to see.
They seem to be uniting against China.
Yeah. So, and their own government.
Yeah. It's good to see. I just hope they don't fuck this up.
I hope not.
Several revolutions, both historically and recently, normally don't turn out very well after it's all said and done.
No, it's because they keep trying to establish another government.
Now, let's get rid of the government by putting in a new one. Why?
Do you not realize that this is what the problem was in the first place?
Yeah.
But
hopefully they don't fuck this up. I want to stay optimistic about them. I want Hong Kong to do something fucking right.
It would be nice.
Yeah.
But moving forward, this one was also posted by myself on Saturday, September 7th. And the headline is, Kamala Harris supports mandatory buyback of assault weapons. Kamala Harris said Friday she supports a mandatory buyback of military-style assault weapons, taking a more aggressive position than her main rivals for the Democratic presidential nomination. Quote, I think it's a good idea, she told reporters after a campaign event in Londonderry, New Hampshire. Londonderry.
That's a place.
Quote, we have to work out the details. There are a lot of details, but I do support a forced buyback, Harris said when asked about the policy. Quote, we have to take those guns off the streets.
They're not in the streets. They're in my house.
Harris's higher polling rivals, Joe Biden, Bernie Sanders, and Elizabeth Warren, back banning sales of semi-automatic rifles like those used in recent mass shootings, but stopped short of calling for a forced buyback of guns already owned. Beto O'Rourke has said he would require owners of such weapons to sell them to the government.
It's bullshit. People do illegal things, so you punish the people who aren't hurting anybody.
But I find the funny thing about this, though, is Beto O'Rourke is the one spearheading this idea.
Literally meanwhile, saying, hell yeah.
He's polling at 2% right now. So
saying, hell yeah, we're coming for your guns. Okay, bullets first.
Bullets first, motherfucker.
Which, bear in mind, people, come and take it is not an invitation. It is a challenge. You don't tell them, come take your guns and hand them over when they show up. You shoot them.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
But moving forward, before James gets another visit from the FBI, this one was posted by Jason Booth on Sunday, September 8th. And the headline is, Castro insinuates gun owners are paranoid, believing the government can become tyrannical. Former Housing and Urban Development Secretary turned 2020 presidential candidate Julian Castro appears to be taking a play out of Senator Kamala Harris's gun control playbook. Over the last few months, Harris has made it very clear that if elected president, she would give Congress 100 days to take up, quote, common sense gun legislation, translation, gun control. If they fail to act, she would use executive action to make her gun control agenda a reality. During an interview on NBC News, Castro reiterated a similar position. According to Castro, politicians repeatedly promise to do something about mass shootings, but there's always an action. Quote, this promise that we're going to do something, that we're going to look at it but never actually do it, he explained. The biggest lies that the president has told include that he would do something about universal background checks. He said that twice after Parkland and then after El Paso and Dayton, and he's gone back on his word. Those are the biggest things that count for this president. Castro argued that it's hunters and people who flock to the range, quote, understand that you don't need weapons of war like AR-15s.
That's literally not a weapon of war.
It's not. He did, however, imply that those who fear a tyrannical government and cling to their guns are paranoid. Quote, I agree that there are a certain percentage that somehow fear that one day the government is going to try and take over the entire country somehow, and they're going to need their weapons, but that's actually a minority of people out there. That's not a majority of people, he said.
Yeah, most people are fucking sheep.
It's like, what do you know? Somebody from the government is telling me not to worry about the government becoming tyrannical.
Literally saying the government's going to take over the whole country. They already have. That's what a government literally does.
That's literally what they have, a standing military in our borders. And it's the police force.
I don't care if he thinks I'm paranoid or not. just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you.
No.
Like, they're definitely coming for your guns. They definitely want this tyranny, this fucking tyrannical structure going on. They want to enslave the population. That's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because they get to benefit for literally nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's ultimately the goal of government, is to expand its power as far and wide as it can.
And if they can't get their power up, they need other people's power to go down.
Yeah. That way they can force people to do things.
So go buy guns. All of them.
Yeah. So this next article was posted by James Freeman, this piece of shit sitting next to me, on Saturday, September 7th.
And I posted something.
For once. But the headline is, ICE agent opens fire on immigrants outside a South Nashville grocery store. On Thursday, September 5th, 2019, an Immigration Customs and Enforcement agent approached three men in a white work van parked in the Food Lion located in Antioch, Tennessee. The Food Lion parking lot is used as an informal rideshare parking. Neighbors have expressed fear and anxiety over the fact that ICE has escalated a civil matter into the use of deadly force. The MIX denounces terrorizing of community members using lethal force against our neighbors and calls on our local elected officials to end cooperation with ICE. The plain-clothed Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement agent approached three men in a parked white work van and requested to see IDs without any reported provocation or necessity. Two of the men in the van provided their IDs. However, the third person exercised his right to refuse to show his ID without a judicial warrant. Then, the ICE agent fired an unconfirmed number of gunshots at the man who refused to show his ID.
Which more than likely means he's dead.
Yeah, the victim managed to escape in the box truck that was found parked in a neighborhood trailer park nearby. Federal officials and MNPD are still looking for the victim and are currently unaware of his whereabouts. Members of the MIX program, Migra Watch, were the first on the scene and arrived to start a live stream and record the incident. The two men who were with the victims were interviewed by federal investigators. A bystander managed to speak with one of the witnesses, verifying their story. ICE shot first and used lethal force when a community member exercised their right to refuse to show ID. No other weapon was fired. Nashville Metro Police arrived on the scene after the ICE agent reported gunfire, and soon thereafter, FBI agents arrived to take over and initiate a federal investigation. Quote, "This is unlike anything we have seen before. We have never seen an ICE agent use lethal force in a civil matter before," said Anna Albescu, member of the MIX.
It may be the first, but it won't be the last.
No. The ICE agent who was involved in this incident was one of two agents involved in a prior incident that occurred in Hermitage, Tennessee, on July 22, 2019. In Hermitage, ICE attempted to use MNPD's presence to intimidate a father to leave his vehicle after he calmly and lawfully refused. Quote, "In light of what happened this morning, it is clear that Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement officials are aware and frustrated that community members understand how to exercise their rights. Now, ICE agents are taking out their frustrations on our neighbors by escalating civil matters into use of lethal force," said Hernan Crescenio, member of the MIX. The MIX is calling upon Mayor David Briley, mayoral candidate John Cooper, and our Metro Council to employ their resources to end Nashville's cooperation with Immigration, Customs, and Enforcement Agency officially and indefinitely. The MIX is demanding a thorough investigation into the incident and demanding the absolute end of collaboration with ICE at every level within our city. Our community needs to feel safe, and we deserve to be safe within our own city.
So, seeing news like this and understanding that this is directly the government being tyrannical,
mm-hmm.
am I really paranoid?
Yeah.
Am I really crazy for thinking that stuff like this literally happens? This literally happened.
Yeah, all he did was exercise his basic rights.
Yeah.
Because if you are not suspected of having committed a crime, then they can't ask for your ID lawfully. And if
no.
they do, you are well within your rights to refuse.
They can ask for it informally. And if you say no,
they can't do anything.
They need a probable cause to demand it.
Exactly.
They can ask, you can say no, that's the end of it.
But clearly this ICE agent just decided that, you know, he was higher than everybody.
Yeah.
And when this individual actually exercised their rights. He just decided to shoot them.
I think he was exercising the wrong rights, though. You do have the right to bear arms. Like, mm-hmm. this whole thing could have been solved a lot quicker if they literally killed the cop.
Well, it is legal to kill a cop if they are acting outside of the law. You can defend yourself up to the point and including killing the arresting officer if they are acting unlawfully.
Yeah. It doesn't go over too well in the heat of the moment because they normally have backup. They're normally armed. They normally just want to kill people for no reason. But
I think he gets the rocks off.
Yeah. You have the right to resist arrest up to fatality. You can mm-hmm. kill a cop if they are trying to act lawfully in an unlawful manner. If they're trying to say, well, you have to do it because I said so. No, bullshit. You have no legal cause. You have no reason. You can fuck off. And if you try and force me to do anything else, I can shoot you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, at that point, they're no longer acting as an officer of the law. They're acting as an aggressor.
Yeah.
And you have the right to defend yourself as you would against any other aggressor. Mm-hmm. So, frankly, fuck ICE. Shoot him. Just shoot him. It's that simple.
Lawfully. Those are jokes for legal reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. Defend yourself. Defend yourself within reason.
Do not start shit, but do not take shit.
Mm-hmm.
If you are to shoot a law enforcement official, let it only be in self-defense in a very legitimate circumstance. Otherwise, they will paint you as a violent aggressor. We don't need that.
I'm all for that paint, though.
But moving forward, this one was posted by Ryan Bauer on Wednesday, September 11th. And headline is, ICE fails to properly redact document reveals location of future urban warfare training facility.
Hey.
The U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency failed to redact a document for at least the second time in less than a month after trying to redact the location of a future urban warfare training facility that is expected to include hyper-realistic simulations of homes, hotels, and commercial buildings in Chicago and Arizona. On Tuesday, ICE published an acquisition form for the procurement of, quote, hyper-realistic training devices for a new training facility for its expanding special response team program on the Federal Business Opportunities website.
I wonder if that includes box trucks and guys that won't give you ID.
The immigration agency had sought to redact the location of the new training facility but failed to do so properly. The agency, which has made this kind of mistake previously, appears to have a systemic information security problem. In this case, Newsweek was able to simply copy and paste the document's context into a word processor and quickly establish that the facility would be built at the Office of Firearms and Tactical Programs, Tactical Operations Complex at Fort Benning, Georgia, a U.S. Army post used to prepare soldiers for combat.
That's unsettling.
Yeah. It is unclear why ICE sought to redact the location of the training facility, as it was previously named in a document obtained by courts. In addition to failing to properly redact the location, however, ICE also sought to withhold information that the Army post would be getting an expansion, with up to 50 buildings expected to be added to the site. Quote, a blanket purchase agreement vehicle will be competed among GSA federal supply schedule holders for additional training buildings and interior-exterior outfitting in the first quarter of fiscal year 20, ICE states in a portion it did not attempt to redact from the document. In a following partially redacted line, it states OFTP plans to expand the training site at Fort Benning to include up to 50 additional buildings and add additional U.S. city layouts and designs. Throughout the document, areas that were meant to be withheld were not redacted properly, including signature lines at the bottom of the document. Instead of names, these would be redacted lines contained what appears to be placeholders. ICE's new training facility is expected to include, quote, at a minimum, a multitude of basic, intermediate, and hyper-realistic training devices, a tactical training warehouse, classroom facilities, and vehicle assault training area. Among those training devices will be a hyper-realistic props design that simulates residential houses, apartments, hotels, government facilities, and commercial buildings, along with other training configurations. ICE is specifically interested in acquiring a Chicago-style replica as well as an Arizona-style replica, with the agency expecting to dedicate a total estimated value of $961,347.75 to the effort.
Goddamn. So
it looks like they're gearing up for war within the United States.
Yeah. So what's that about being paranoid?
Yeah.
About them sweeping the country and being kind of hands on in everything and mm-hmm. and all this tyrannical bullshit. Am I really paranoid for thinking this?
Yeah, I don't feel like it's unjustified paranoia.
Yeah. So you're not getting our guns. Fuck you. I say time to stock up and wait for the Boogaloo to find you.
Yeah.
But it's funny the way that this is going, because like on a front, the politicians are trying to maintain the air of peace. They're like, oh, we're totally not going to do anything. Just listen to us because we're your elected faces of politics. Mm-hmm. And then in the back, you see the smaller bullshit going on behind the curtain. You see, obviously, they're fucking randomly searching people trying to find potential illegal immigrants. No fucking probable cause, no nothing. And they'll shoot you if you don't comply, which is your fucking right. Mm-hmm. And then they've got this urban warfare development thing going on, literally training people to fight in local urban areas.
Yep.
They're literally training them to fight in local cities. Like, this is literally the standing army, guys. That's literally what this is. They are training people to fight in a domestic war. They're trying to gear up for a civil war.
James, I don't think you understand. You're just paranoid.
I am paranoid.
The government would never be tyrannical.
Oh, never. Ever. Never. This all has to be justified in some way. It's for our own good.
It's for our own good.
They're taking care of us. God
now,
bless
now
the nanny
excuse
state.
Excuse me while I walk away to go take a bite of my boot lollipop.
Right.
But this next article was posted by Jason Booth on Wednesday, September 11th. And the headline is the U.S. government the enemy of the people? America's lost liberties post 9/11. Now, I want to preface this. I strongly recommend, I didn't, you know, paste the entire article. It would have been a mouthful to read the whole thing, but I
big
do
article.
Recommend that you go into, and Joe, go into the group and seek out this article because it is definitely worth the read. But I did get about the first half of it in for this. So the article starts, what began with the post 9/11 passage of the USA Patriot Act has snowballed into the eradication of every vital safeguard against government overreach, corruption, and abuse. The citizenry's unquestioning acquiescence to anything the government wants to do in exchange for the phantom promise of safety and security has resulted in a society where the nation is being locked down into a militarized, mechanized, hypersensitive, legalistic, self-righteous, goose-stepping antithesis of every principle upon which this nation was founded.
That is a lot of very mean adjectives.
It is. I love how we went completely informal at the end with goose-stepping. But set against a backdrop of government surveillance, militarized police, SWAT team raids, asset forfeiture, eminent domain, over-criminalization, armed surveillance drones, whole-body scanners, stop-and-frisk searches, police violence, and the like, all of which have been sanctioned by Congress, the White House, and the courts, our constitutional freedoms have been steadily chipped away at, undermined, eroded, whittled down, and generally discarded. The rights embodied in the Constitution, if not already eviscerated, are on life support. Free speech, the right to protest, the right to challenge government wrongdoing, due process, a presumption of innocence, the right to self-defense, accountability and transparency in government, privacy, press, sovereignty, assembly, bodily integrity, representative government, all of these and more have become casualties in the government's war on the American people, a war that has grown more pronounced since 9/11. Indeed, since the towers fell on 9/11, the U.S. government has posed a greater threat to our freedoms than any terrorist, extremist, or foreign entity ever could.
No shit.
While nearly 3,000 people died in the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. government and its agents have easily killed at least 10 times that number of civilians in the U.S. and abroad since 9/11 through its police shootings, SWAT team raids, drone strikes, and profit-driven efforts to police the globe, sell weapons to foreign nations, which too often fall into the hands of terrorists, and foment civil unrest in order to keep the military-industrial complex gainfully employed. The American people have been treated like enemy combatants, to be spied on, tracked, scanned, frisked, searched, subjected to all manners of intrusion, intimidated, invaded, raided, manhandled, censored, silenced, shot at, locked up, denied due process, and killed. In allowing ourselves to be distracted by terror drills, foreign wars, color-coded warnings, underwear bombers, and other carefully constructed exercises in propaganda, sleight of hand, and obfuscation, we failed to recognize that the U.S. government, the government that was supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people, has become the enemy of the people. This is a government that has grown so corrupt, greedy, power-hungry, and tyrannical over the course...
There's that word again, tyrannical. Yeah,
over the course of the past 240-plus years that our constitutional republic has since given way to idiocracy, and representative government has given way to kleptocracy, a government ruled by thieves, and a kakistocracy, a government run by unprincipled career politicians, corporations, and thieves that panders to the worst vices in our nature and has little regard for the rights of American citizens. This is a government that, in conjunction with its corporate partners, views the citizenry as consumers and bits of data to be bought, sold, and traded. This is a government that spies on and treats its people as if they have no right to privacy, especially in their own homes. This is a government that is laying the groundwork to weaponize the people's biomedical data as a convenient means by which to penalize certain unacceptable social behaviors. Incredibly, as part of a proposal being considered by the Trump administration, a new government agency, HARPA, a healthcare counterpart to the Pentagon's research and development arm, DARPA, will take the lead in identifying and targeting signs of mental illness or violent inclinations among the populace by using artificial intelligence to collect data from Apple Watches, Fitbits, Amazon Echo, and Google Home. This is a government that routinely engages in taxation without representation, whose elected officials lobby for our votes only to ignore us once elected. This is a government comprised of petty bureaucrats, vigilantes masquerading as cops, and faceless technicians. Now, mind you, that was about half of the article, so there is a fair bit more to read. Just didn't want to drag that out for too long and read the whole thing, but I strongly recommend you guys seek out that one and read it for yourself. It's very well put.
Yeah, that right there.
I think that's the best article I've seen that kind of describes what's happened post 9/11.
Yeah, that entirely summarizes and justifies any reason of alleged paranoia, any reason to think the government is tyrannical.
These are not theories. These are facts.
This is literally what is happening, what has been happening, and what's going to continue happening.
Yeah.
This is what we are in. This is where we are right now. You want to ask why people are fucking paranoid about the U.S. government? They are the enemy of the people.
Yeah.
The prey is always paranoid of the predator.
Mm-hmm. But moving forward to our next article, this is actually our first wild card of the show, and it is our ace card. This was posted by Taylor Downs on Tuesday, September 10th, and the headline is, Trump ousts Bolton after anger over Afghan news coverage. President Donald Trump ousted National Security Advisor John Bolton on Tuesday, saying he and the hawkish aide have quote, disagreed strongly on many issues and suggesting that Bolton had collided with other Trump advisors too. The decision came after widespread reports that Bolton tried to stop Trump from inviting leaders of the Afghan Taliban to Camp David for peace talks. Trump ultimately scrapped the idea, but multiple people familiar with the issue said the news reports about Bolton's dissent, believed to have been planted by Bolton's aides, infuriated Trump. Bolton's ouster leaves yet another vacancy in the upper echelons of the Trump administration, where many roles are either unfilled or filled on an acting basis, including several that deal with national security issues. It also means Trump could hear fewer dissenting voices on major moves he wants to make on the national security front, such as talking to the leaders of Iran. The president himself didn't get too specific in his tweets announcing Bolton's departure, though he indicated it was not a spur-of-the-moment move. Quote, I informed John Bolton last night that his services are no longer needed at the White House, Trump wrote. I disagreed strongly with many of his suggestions, as did others in the administration, and therefore I asked John for his resignation, which was given to me this morning. I thank John very much for his service. Bolton offered a conflicting account on Twitter minutes after Trump's posts. Quote, "I offered to resign last night, and President Trump said, 'Let's talk about it tomorrow,'" he wrote online. Bolton did not respond to a request for comment. The news caught many in the administration off guard. Shortly before Trump's tweets, the White House had announced that Bolton would appear at a briefing later Tuesday with Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. The two cabinet secretaries, both of whom had their own frustrations with Bolton, appeared together and in good spirits.
Well, no shit. They just got rid of Bolton, a guy that they had qualms with. He's gone, yeah, so they're
a lot
happy.
Of people have had qualms with.
Yeah, a lot of people that didn't want to have qualms with him, he had qualms with them.
Yeah,
qualms all around.
So many qualms. But he's just a textbook warmonger. Like,
yeah.
his policy on foreign affairs is use the military to pressure them into doing what we want.
For the glory of the empire.
For the glory of the empire. But yeah, Bolton was a piece of shit. I mean,
absolutely.
I believe that this was one of the rare occasions where Trump actually made a good move for once.
I think he more or less just does random shit and doesn't care what the outcome is.
He just kind of hopes for the best.
Right? Just do random stuff. Maybe something will be good. Maybe it'll be bad. Who cares?
And that's how we got to vape bans.
Yeah, vape bans.
Which, if I'm not mistaken, we will actually talk about in the second segment.
I believe so.
So, with that said, we're going to take a short break. And after that, we will get right back to it.
Yep. Please fucking work.
And we're testing.
Are we?
And we're back.
Yeah.
So, jumping right back into it, this first article was posted by Jason Booth on Saturday, September 7th, and the headline is, "Federal Lawsuit Over Shooting Death of Lavoy Finicum Dismissed." So, a federal lawsuit relating to the shooting of rancher Robert Lavoy Finicum was dismissed Friday. The civil suit was filed in the U.S. District Court of Oregon by Ryan Payne, Shauna Cox, and others who were associated with the Bundy family's 2016 occupation of the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge. They claimed that FBI agents, Oregon State Police, and other officials violated their civil rights by using excessive force and ambushing them on the day Finicum was shot and killed. Chief District Court Judge Michael Mossman dismissed all counts in the lawsuit. Quote, "It's time to put a fork in this case," Mossman said. The lawsuit was filed in January 2018. Many of the original defendants in the case, including FBI agent W. Joseph Astorita and Oregon Governor Kate Brown, had already been dismissed over the course of nearly 2 years of litigation. So that's kind of a shame. I don't know if you guys remember the whole Bundy occupation.
Yeah. That's,
I guess, no justice for them.
Yeah, that's a bunch of bullshit. They'll just do what they want, and get away with it, as per usual.
Yeah. The all-too-common repetition of government doing whatever they want.
2 fucking years, though. That's a long time for no result.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about these, is they usually take fucking forever.
Yeah. So you're sitting there, sweating and stressing and shit this whole time, hoping for something, just 2 years later to turn up empty-handed. Like, they killed a guy, and they're getting away with it.
As they always do.
Yep.
But moving forward, this next one was posted by Jason Booth on Wednesday, September 11th. And the headline is, "State Trooper Arrested on 61 Counts of Sex-Related Kidnapping and Fraud Charges." DPS held a news conference Tuesday afternoon after a state trooper was arrested on 61 counts of criminal charges. The trooper, identified as 43-year-old Tremaine Jackson, worked for DPS for 13 years. Jackson was placed on administrative leave after he was accused in early June of sexually assaulting a woman during a traffic stop. This event started on May 19th, where we received an initial complaint about some inappropriate comments by Trooper Jackson to a female motorist, said DPS Director Colonel Frank Milstead. Quote, "While we were investigating that May complaint, on June 11th, we received a second complaint, this one also alleging inappropriate commentary and then also criminal behavior to the extent of sexual abuse. DPS officials said that said that's when he was suspended, and a total of 8 women have come forward so far. There's a worry over the possibility of more victims." quote, Trooper Jackson was using his position as Arizona State Trooper to bargain leniency for favor, said Colonel Milstead. On Tuesday night, Jackson was taken to the 4th Avenue Jail before his first court appearance. He was booked on multiple counts of sexual abuse, attempted sexual abuse, sexual extortion, unlawful imprisonment, kidnapping, harassment, forgery, and tampering with a public record, among other charges.
God damn.
Yeah. On Tuesday morning, officers raided Jackson's home in the West Valley. Jackson reportedly moved into the home recently. Quote, they just moved in last week, said one man. Jackson appeared in court Wednesday and was given a $150,000 bond. So far, eight women have come forward with allegations, but with the timeline only starting last October, Jackson's entire career with the DPS is being scrutinized. In addition, DPS does not have body cameras, and with an allegation of sexual assault during a traffic stop, it begs the question of whether body cameras would have prevented the incidents. Quote, probably not, said Colonel Milstead. Quote, cameras can be manipulated to a degree to allow people to do inappropriate things.
No, they're not manipulated. They malfunction conveniently.
They conveniently malfunction.
So, I'm just wondering, in all of that shit that went on, which part of that fell under serve or protect?
All of it. He's an officer. He clearly had good intentions in mind. Don't you know how stressful his job is, James?
He just needs spontaneous stress relief by means of sexual assault.
And he needs some way to blow off steam.
Right? He's totally justified because his job is so stressful. It's got to be so stressful pulling people over for no reason and shooting dogs and making people's lives miserable. That's got to be a stressful fucking
job. So stressful, you know.
Just... And so if you need a nut in the middle of a shift, just pull someone over and nut, you know?
At least according to Mr. Jackson.
Fuck the police. God damn. So what was that about paranoia of tyranny?
And we're actually seeing the rare occurrence of them actually facing charges. I mean, even if he gets let off, which with this many charges, I doubt he will. But even if he does, usually they won't even criminally charge officers. They'll just, like, conduct an internal investigation, decide they did nothing wrong, and move on.
Yeah. I do like, however, that in that instance, they don't have body cameras. And the colonel even admitted, no, it probably wouldn't have stopped anything.
Either that or he's just saying that as ammo to try and prevent their department from getting body cameras.
But still, he ended up, whether it was intentional or accidental, he did speak the truth in the matter.
Police often, you know, tamper with their body cameras to be able to do things.
Yeah. And then they'll say it's a malfunction, but he said it can be manipulated. Yeah, mm-hmm. And it usually fucking is.
And they just call it an unfortunate malfunction.
Yep. It just happened to malfunction right when they murdered someone.
Yeah, that's just how it works. But this next article was posted by Jason Booth on Saturday, September 7th. And the headline is, Massachusetts mayor arrested for extorting marijuana vendors for six-figure bribes.
God damn.
Jaciel Correa II, the already embattled mayor of Fall River, Massachusetts, was arrested Friday on new federal extortion charges for allegedly operating a scheme to help marijuana vendors get approval to operate in exchange for hundreds of thousands of dollars in bribes. Prosecutors say Correa agreed to sign non-opposition letters in return for significant six-figure payments from four marijuana vendors looking to open businesses in the city of nearly 90,000, about an hour's drive south of Boston. The letters are required to obtain a license to operate a marijuana business in Massachusetts where cannabis is legal. Correa, 27, appeared in Boston federal court Friday afternoon and pleaded not guilty. Quote, I'm not guilty of these charges, he told reporters afterwards, standing next to his attorney outside the courthouse.
Oh, he said it. It must be true.
Must be. Quote, I've done nothing but good for the great city of Fall River, me and my staff and my team. I'm going to continue to do great things for our citizens.
Okay.
The Democrat mayor also is accused of extorting $3,900 in cash and a $7,500 to $12,000 Batman Rolex watch from a property owner in exchange for activating the water supply to his building. In addition, federal prosecutors say Correa demanded his chief of staff give him half of her $78,000 salary in return for appointing her and allowing her to keep her city job. Four others, including the former chief of staff, Genoveva Andrade, were also charged with federal crimes. Andrade faces federal extortion, theft and bribery, and false statement charges in connection with the scheme. Antonio Costa, Hildegard Camara, and David Hebert were charged separately with extortion conspiracy, extortion, and false statements after allegedly lying to federal agents about their roles in helping Correa with his scheme. It marks the second time in less than a year that Correa, first elected in 2015, has been indicted. He was arrested in October on charges he defrauded investors of an app company he owns by pocketing 64% of their payments to bankroll what prosecutors call his, quote, lavish lifestyle and political career. He's pleaded not guilty to those charges as well. He now faces 24 total charges, 13 from last year's arrest and 11 new charges, including bribery, extortion, conspiracy, extortion, and aiding and abetting wire fraud and filing false tax returns. Wire fraud, extortion conspiracy, and extortion aiding and abetting each have maximum sentences of 20 years in prison. The maximum sentence for filing false tax returns is 3 years, while bribery carries up to 10 years.
So while these all sound like uniquely disgusting things that just this guy's doing, the only real difference between him and other politicians is at least this guy is honest about the shit he's doing. He's upfront about the dishonesty he's doing. He's more in your face about being a shitbag. Whereas other politicians, they try and be a bit more weaselly about it.
Yeah, a little more careful. Yeah. But yeah, clearly this young politician didn't quite know what he was doing and figured he could use his power to just, you know, blatantly extort people.
Yeah, you have to be sneaky about it.
You have to be sneaky about it in such a way that you can deny it.
Yeah, because other politicians, there's plenty of them where their lifestyle far surpasses what their alleged salary is or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Because of lobbying. Not bribery, lobbying.
Which is literally legal bribery.
Yeah, there's all kinds of other ways they get around it and make it all look all nice and white on the surface, but it's really some bad shit.
Yeah.
This guy didn't even bother with making it look clean, and he's saying he's innocent. Boy, you're a politician. We all know you're shit.
Yeah, you ain't innocent of shit.
We know you're a shitbag from the start. But at least he's being just more blatant about it. Yeah. He's being more in your face about the shitbag he's being.
And it's also, there's the potential that he could spend the rest of his life in prison for what he's done.
Yeah. Because
he's hoping.
He did the same thing as other politicians. He just didn't do it as cleanly as them.
No, he didn't do it cleanly at all. I mean, clearly, he's being charged on, what, 24 different counts?
That's a lot.
Or 24 charges?
So If you think this guy's a shitbag, wait till you see the other politicians.
Yeah, the ones that are actually good at hiding their dirty laundry.
Yeah. But I don't want to get suicided by the Clintons. Please, no.
This next article was posted by myself on Tuesday, September 10th. And the headline is, Jury Selection Set to Begin in Case of Ex-Dallas Cop Who Killed Black Neighbor. So finally an update to this story. I noticed when it kind of went dark.
Yeah.
I was sitting here waiting for an update, and we finally got one. But jury selection is set to begin Friday for the white former Dallas police officer who shot and killed her unarmed black neighbor in his apartment last year. Amber Geiger said she entered the apartment by mistake and thought 26-year-old Botham Shem Jean was a burglar. Geiger, a 4-year police veteran who was fired last year, who was originally charged with manslaughter after the September 6th, 2018 slaying of Jean, a Dallas accountant and native of St. Lucia. In November, a grand jury handed up an indictment for murder. Jean, an up-and-coming associate at PricewaterhouseCoopers in Dallas, was a leader in his local church who hoped to someday return to St. Lucia and enter public service. According to Geiger, she was coming off a double shift and parked on the fourth floor of her apartment complex instead of the third floor where her apartment was located. She walked to where her apartment would have been if she were on the right floor. There was a bright red doormat Jean placed outside his door to help friends know which apartment was his. And mind you, I've seen the pictures of this, of like the outside of his apartment. It's very fucking blatant. And the fact that she would have had to have looked down at the key card, the electronic key card, to be able to insert her card, she would have saw the fucking mat.
Yeah.
Like, it was very blatant.
I mean, he put it there specifically to identify his apartment.
Yeah. So Geiger said she went to insert her electronic key and the door pushed open. She walked in. It was dark. She saw a man inside, and she said she pulled her service weapon and shot Jean in the chest. Geiger then turned on the light, realized she was in the wrong apartment, and called 911. Quote, "I thought I was in my apartment. I shot a guy thinking it was my apartment," she said on the 911 call. Geiger repeated more than 20 times, quote, "I thought it was my apartment." Geiger has admitted to the shooting, and the key elements of the case aren't in dispute. The question the jury must decide is, was this an accident or murder? Her defense team may argue that the killing was a mistake by an officer who thought she was in a dangerous situation and thought she was acting in self-defense. The prosecution, however, may rebut that arguing she was not on duty or responding to a dispatch call, and when she shot Jean, she was a civilian who had broken into his house, and as such, she has no legal standing. But I remember when this was developing originally, there were witnesses that reported that she was banging on his door loudly, and eventually he answered, and they started arguing.
Yeah, it wasn't just, "I gently pushed the door open." It was an altercation.
Yeah.
There was something there.
Yeah, so there was an altercation, as, you know, according to witnesses. At some point, Geiger stepped into his apartment and shot him.
Yeah.
She didn't slide a key card and gently push it open. No, she was pounding on his door for an excessive amount of time. And allegedly, it is thought that they were actually in a relationship with one another.
Ooh.
Yeah, and also, on the night of the shooting, if I'm not mistaken, she was not arrested immediately, and it makes you wonder if she was intoxicated at the time, and the police let her go so that she could sober up before being taken in.
Yeah, she wasn't calling the cops for emergency services, she was calling the cops to get her gang to help her cover things up.
Yeah.
That's what that was. But either story you run on this, you try and run her defense of, I didn't know. Okay, first off, red doormat, specifically to identify his apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Second off, if he's in the floor under yours, there's a good chance you see his apartment often when you're going from your apartment to the lower floor to get to your car. Like, there's a good chance you probably pass his apartment. You probably know he lives there. You know what his apartment looks like and how it's different from yours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're not going to get this mixed up.
Yeah, that's another thing. How do you step into the apartment and not immediately realize with the furniture arrangements that
this isn't
yours?
My couch. My TV isn't over there.
Yeah, like, it has bullshit written all over it with her statement of she didn't think it was her apartment.
Her defense makes no sense and holds no fucking water.
No, it doesn't.
So that even if they stand adamantly by that, that's not going to fly.
No, it isn't.
And then it does make a lot more sense. Like, relationship or no relationship, drunk or not drunk, there's witnesses saying there was an altercation. There's witnesses saying that she was getting aggressive and a little bit excessive with beating on the door.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that story makes a lot more sense because you don't accidentally just shoot a guy because you're in the wrong apartment. That seems more like it was a crime of passion in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, while potentially intoxicated.
Potentially. Like, all these other contributing factors may or may not be true, but there's witnesses saying it was an aggressive altercation,
mm-hmm.
and then she shot a guy. That's all you need to take away from it to see that she did that intentionally.
Yeah. So, fuck her.
Right?
All right. So, this next article was posted by myself on Wednesday, September 11th, and the headline is, "Trump administration readies ban on flavored e-cigarettes amid outbreak of vaping-related deaths."
There it is.
The Trump administration is preparing to ban flavored e-cigarettes as federal health officials call for restrictions to combat an outbreak of a mysterious lung disease that has sickened hundreds and killed at least six people. So apparently six people is an outbreak.
Oh, yeah.
U.S. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar told reporters Wednesday. I don't see how six deaths is
outbreak. It's a big problem. We're actually trying to do something about making vending machines safer for people because annually we have more than six deaths by vending machines.
Yeah.
Vending machines are murderous, bloodthirsty machines, and we need to do something about it.
Yeah, the article continues. The Food and Drug Administration is currently finalizing its guidance to remove all non-tobacco flavors of e-cigarettes, including mint and menthol, from the market within 30 days. Companies might be able to reintroduce their flavors at a later date so long as they submit a formal application and receive approval from the FDA. Vaping companies such as Juul have been criticized for hooking children on e-cigarettes with flavors such as mango and cream. The surge in underage vaping, which U.S. health officials have labeled as an epidemic, is one of the reasons why they plan to ban them, at least until the FDA can thoroughly review their safety, Azar said after meeting with President Donald Trump at the White House on the issue. Quote, "The Trump administration is making it clear that we intend to clear the market of flavored e-cigarettes to reverse the deeply concerning epidemic of youth e-cigarette use that is impacting children, families, schools, and communities," Azar said in a statement. Quote, "We will not stand idly by as these products become an on-ramp to combustible cigarettes or nicotine addiction for a generation of youth." Gottlieb labeled teen vaping an epidemic almost exactly a year ago. Under Gottlieb, the FDA moved to limit sales of fruity flavors to age-restricted stores, such as vape shops. Lawmakers and public health official groups, public health groups have urged the agency to do more, with Minority Whip Dick Durbin last week telling Sharpless to take, quote, "decisive action or else resign." Quote, "Finally, the FDA is doing its job," Durbin said in a statement Wednesday. American Vaping Association President Gregory Conley criticized the planned ban, saying in a statement it would, quote, "remove life-changing options from the market." Wednesday's announcement comes as members of Congress increasingly pressure the administration to rein in the e-cigarette industry. The CDC is investigating more than 450 cases of lung disease officials suspect were caused by vaping. Some officials have honed in on a vitamin E oil that's been added to some THC vaping products as a possible cause. Regardless, the outbreak has fueled calls to restrict the e-cigarette industry amid what regulators are calling an epidemic of teen vaping. Trump called on the FDA to get to the bottom of the outbreak.
So
now, that's that key little thing. The CDC has actually linked, you know, all like a lot of the cases have in common, they were vaping THC oil.
Yeah.
And a pretty large portion of those people said that it was black market THC cartridges.
Yeah.
With those additives. This is not white market fucking nicotine vape products that is causing this. It's very poorly chosen black market THC cartridges. Usually these kids are, you know, buying them from very irreputable vendors that you can't trust.
Yeah.
Like, they're being stupid about it. I mean,
these kids are already.
That's what's causing this.
These kids already don't give a shit about the white market options because they're going to go for black market options.
Yeah.
Because they can get high with no scent. It's really difficult to detect. And as far as anyone looking sees, they're just vaping.
Yeah. But this issue is not caused by legal vape products, yet they're trying to restrict the black market by banning the white market.
That's just going to make the black market grow, fam.
It is. It's just going to make it stronger.
Ban all the things. Do it. The black market does not care. But I think another thing I think is a little funny on this is the whole focus on them being underage.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Whether it was black market cartridges or not, they're already underage.
Yeah.
They already don't give a fuck about your laws.
It's already banned.
It's already not legal for them to have it anyways, yet here they are.
Make it double illegal.
Right?
Okay, here's what we'll do. You see, teens are vaping. So what we'll do is we'll make it where adults can't vape, and that'll somehow make it where teens don't vape.
That's what we do.
No, what this is the FDA being in the pocket of the fucking tobacco industry. Over 480,000 people die every year in the United States alone due to tobacco-related causes. Yeah, they don't give a fuck about the deaths.
No.
They don't care.
Six vape-related deaths?
Yeah,
like,
what this
really?
is big tobacco is more established.
I think tobacco
has politicians in their pocket.
I think they're mad that those are six deaths that they didn't get to account for. They're mad that they didn't get to kill those six people.
Fucking up our statistics.
Right?
But, yeah, like, then you don't really hear shit about cigarettes being banned.
No.
Even though 480,000 people a year, and just the U.S. alone, this isn't a global number, this is just the United States, 480,000 per year from smoking, like, tobacco-related issues. but 6 people die from black market THC oil, so now we need to ban all flavored vapes.
All of it.
All of it.
Starting with mint and menthol.
No, what this is the tobacco industry hasn't been able to break into the vape industry as much as they would like. So they're
just going to break down the vape industry.
They'd rather just ban it. Yeah. That way people have no other choice but to go to tobacco again.
We can't compete, so we'll just destroy the competition.
Via the government.
Yeah.
But this next article was posted by Taylor Downs on Tuesday, September 10th. And the headline is, "Detective who led Epstein investigation died after brief illness at 50. Again,
that's awful convenient.
Ain't it? Again, another story that didn't quite make it into the mainstream news' narrative involving Jeffrey Epstein. In June of last year, decorated former Palm Beach detective Joseph Ricari died after a, quote, brief illness at the age of 50, and that's basically all we know. But do a search for him, and you'll barely see anything in the mainstream media or even alternative media about his death. It makes you wonder if that brief illness was brought on by outside forces. The man was in good health and only 50 years old. This sudden death is made all the more strange because of statements made by Reader. In 2010, Reader gave an exclusive interview to the Daily Beast where he states that during the investigation, both him and Ricari became aware that they were under surveillance for several months by an unknown source. Reader also previously stated that State Attorney Barry Krishner was hesitant to prosecute Epstein, causing Reader to send a letter to Krishner complaining of the, quote, highly unusual conduct involved in the case. That State Attorney Krishner turned a blind eye to the case is made all the more disturbing when you recognize he was also in charge of Florida's Crimes Against Children Unit, a position in which he could directly affect cases against individuals accused of crimes against kids."
So I'm just going to call it that brief illness, the people that were surveilling him.
Mm-hmm.
It was all on the account of the Clintons. The Clintons were surveilling him. And that brief illness was severe lead poisoning, straight to the head.
Straight to the head via a gun.
Yes.
It was suicide, though. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah. He definitely suicided.
There was 5 bullet wounds to the back of his head. It was suicide.
Oh, yeah.
The Clintons said in a statement earlier today.
But I want to keep an eye on stuff like that as long as it relates with the Epstein case.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to sweep that under the rug.
They're trying their best.
And with stuff like this happening, like they're trying to sweep it under the rug, but we just keep watching them do it.
Yeah.
I literally see you sweeping.
I see you sweeping.
Sweep or no sweeping.
That'll be a great fucking t-shirt design. Like have a photoshopped image of Hillary Clinton sweeping something under a rug, like all startled and everything. It's like, I see you sweeping. But this next article was posted by Jason Booth on Monday, September 9th. And the headline is, "New proposed federal law would make it easier to medically kidnap children by doctors. It is not just fractures parents may have to try and explain to avoid a life sentence of being accused of child abuse or shaken baby syndrome if one child abuse specialist gets her way in new proposed federal legislation." According to Dr. Lynn Sheets, medical director of Child Advocacy and Protective Services at Children's Hospital of Wisconsin, a bruise is a, quote, sentinel injury. Dr. Sheets claims, quote, "One of the things we realized is if you call it a bruise, everyone has bruises. Everyone thinks about it as a minor injury, including the doctors, including child welfare. So we needed to change the way people are thinking about these minor injuries in young infants."
It's no longer a bruise. It's an abuse mark.
It's a sentinel injury. She continues by saying, quote, "Think of them differently. They're warning injuries or important injuries. They're sentinel injuries. That's why I coined the term, and it has caught on nationally and even internationally."
Well, yeah, people like strange new words.
Now, her reasoning for this newly coined term is a study she participated in 2003, Sentinel Injuries in Infants Evaluated for Child Physical Abuse. The study includes 401 children less than 12 months of age. The children were found to have definite abuse, intermediate concern for abuse, and no abuse. Never is it mentioned how the definite abuse was founded. It only states the children were evaluated by the child protection team at a children's hospital. Of these, quote, sentinel injuries, 80% were bruises, 11% were intraoral injuries, and 7% were noted as other. Their conclusion was, sentinel injuries are common in abused children. Dr. Sheets has now gone so far as to propose legislation in the U.S. Senate, SB 1009, which has been sponsored by Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin. Dr. Douglas Smith, a retired University of Michigan professor of pathology who has testified in cases where parents are wrongly accused of shaken baby syndrome, wrote the following in a letter to Senator Tammy Baldwin that Health Impact News obtained, opposing Dr. Sheets' questionable science and trying to expand the net to catch parents allegedly abusing their children in order to remove more children from their parents by CPS. The bill, if passed, is a recipe for disaster, fueled by money, and will likely result in countless more false allegations of child abuse. This means more CPS involvement in families, which will take more of their time that they could be using to investigate real abuse and neglect, tearing innocent families apart based on flawed studies, misleading information in medical reports, and biased opinions, which are already why so many children are being medically kidnapped.
Now, I've got a lot to say on this. First off, I was a very bruised child, like consistently. There was one point, I think I was 5 years old, I was climbing a tree. Mm-hmm. I could see the top of my house from this tree, and I fell out of this tree and onto my back on a root.
Ooh.
I was a consistently bruised child. My parents absolutely loved me. Did not abuse me at all, but under these new definitions and strange new words, I probably would have been medically kidnapped because I was a fucking idiot.
Yeah, and then, like, kidnapped by Child Protective Services, quote, lost in the system and probably sold into sex trafficking.
Now let's say you don't get lost in the system. Let's say you do stay in the system in foster care and all that shit. I've met foster kids.
Mm-hmm.
They hate foster care.
Yeah.
They just, even if they're not getting abused, there's the consistent jumping family to family all over the place. You don't know what a home is. You don't know what family is. And then there's plenty of other cases where they stay in one spot and they get the shit beat out of them.
Yep.
The foster family is significantly more abusive than their original family ever could have been.
And it's a family the government put them with.
Yeah. So they're taking kids who are potentially just fucking idiots hurting themselves like I was,
mm-hmm.
And putting them in either shitty abusive foster homes or Epstein's Island.
Yeah.
Who fucking knows? And they're stealing your money the whole time they do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're running you through the rings trying to, you know, force you to justify that you can keep the child you've fucking birthed.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're running a whole circus of shit just to do what they want with your kids.
Yeah. That's also what Child Protective Services is.
They do nothing to protect children.
No, they don't.
Nothing.
If anything, they traumatize them.
Oh, yeah.
I know I've had my fucking run-ins with Child Protective Services because of false allegations. Thanks, Dad. But moving forward, before we get a little too personal, this next article is actually our second wild card of the night, and it is our Joker card. This one was posted by Leanne Jones on Thursday, September 12th. And the headline is, two YouTubers arrested for trespassing near Area 51. Two men from the Netherlands were arrested in Las Vegas for trespassing on federal property near Area 51. Both claim they didn't know they were breaking the law. Quote, no, we did not. We didn't realize this was going to happen, 21-year-old Govert Sweep said on a video call from the Nye County Detention Center. He, along with 20-year-old T.S. Granzier, are accused of trespassing at the Nevada National Security Site Tuesday. Nye County Sheriff's deputies said they found a car parked at a gate about 3 miles into the property. Cameras and a drone were found inside the duo's vehicle. Sweep said none of this was meant to happen. He said he and Granzier were on the way to Tonopah, Nevada, from Las Vegas when they came across the Area 51 Alien Center in the Amargosa Valley. That's where they heard about the internet-famed Storm Area 51 event, unaware of the seriousness of trying to get on top-secret government land. Quote, the woman in the Alien Center, the gas station, said, okay, you can go to Mercury and you can watch there. So we're just like, okay, and we go there. We're driving, as I said. We were not the only ones going there. There were a lot of cars going there, Sweep explained. Sweep said trespassing was not a planned part of their trip. Quote, we didn't have any intention to storm it because we leave one day before the actual storming dates, and we just wanted to make to go there, Sweep claimed. Even so, police said both men understood exactly what the no trespassing signs said, but still wanted to look at the facility. Granzier is the personality on a popular European YouTube channel with more than 735,000 subscribers. Sweep, also a YouTuber, hoped they'll be both be released soon. It's uncertain when the Dutchman will be allowed to leave. You jumped the gun, guys.
Yeah, we kind of need to keep all that shit on the down low before the actual dates. We need to surprise them all at once.
You need them to think it's actually a joke.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually a joke, right?
Yeah.
It is a joke.
It's totally a joke.
We're totally
guys,
not.
Guys, why did you do this?
We're totally not showing up in 5 days from this recording. Definitely not.
100% not. But, yeah, that's. It's kind of unfortunate, but it's funny at the same time.
The government is taking it so seriously.
Like, guys, you should know if you're going to the United States, at least understand how our government operates. They're very serious about their secrets.
How the fuck can foreigners know how the American government operates when the American government doesn't know how the American government operates?
You're right. That's thanks to bureaucracy. But yeah, just a beautiful time. A beautiful time. They jumped the gun.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say, they fucked up.
Someone get these guys some fucking medals and ribbons. They need to be...
They were the scouts. They were scouting ahead.
We need to get them some boots on the ground medals so they can take those home as veterans of the Area 51 raid.
Mm-hmm.
We need to praise these heroes and thank them for their service. Good
job,
guys.
Thank you for
your
service, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for scouting ahead a few days in advance. Now we have a slightly better idea of what we're going up against.
They might arrest a couple of people. So I think once we get there, full horde, I think we'll be okay.
Oh, yeah. But that brings us to the end of this episode of Week in Anjo. You guys didn't see it, but this episode actually took about three and a half hours to record.
Yeah.
We ran into a lot of snags trying to get some other things set up and introduced.
Running around with a lot of different software, trying to make everything work correctly.
It's been a fun time, but we got it down.
Yeah.
Hopefully you guys enjoy, and thank you for tuning in as usual. And don't forget to tune in this coming Wednesday for another episode of Down the Rabbit Hole, following our monthly series on conspiracies.
Yes. Still picking out a conspiracy theory for this Wednesday, but there's so many. It's not hard to think of one. It's hard to think of one that we want to do over others.
Yeah, exactly.
So we'll keep you covered on that. Like we said, Wednesday. So see you guys then.
All right. Don't die, guys.
Or die.
Don't.